So let's start with one issue. And this actually could have been an extra maramakom that I could have added, but it just kind of occurred to me later. But here's something to note and take a look at. So where we left off yesterday, I think, we were talking about the nature of different possible reasons for a mitzvah of chinuch and how that affects different things, like the chiyuv of the mother, and whether there's more than one reason. And I wanted to consider how this affects a specific rishon, and that is the Ramban. Because we also discussed the question of whether the child is chayiv or not. And one of the main reasons to say the child is not chayiv is because the child is not subject to any mitzvos. So how is the child going to be chayiv in mitzvos d'rabbanan if mitzvos d'rabbanan are obligatory on us because of lo sasur, and the child is patur from lo sasur? So if he's not a part of lo sasur, how's he going to be chayiv in mitzvos even on a level mid-rabbanan? That's a question. And we saw there's a Rashi like that. It was on one of the earlier Makaros that Katan is not subject to Takanas d'Rabbanan. So all of that creates a certain technical difficulty, which might be what pushes some of the Rishonim to say, indeed, the Katan is not Mechuyiv, and the Chiyuv is on the father. But the Katan does not have a personal responsibility here, and Al-Pidin is not considered to be a Mechuyiv Bedavar to fulfill, to discharge the obligation of anyone else. So I have a question for you. You may have had a chance yesterday to articulate this, or maybe not, so we'll say it now. Among these Rishonim, who takes this position that the mitzvah is not in the Katan, is the Ramban. You saw the Ramban, you saw him quoted by the Ran in Megillah, to Daf Yutes, recall that. It's also the Mohammed showed you that as well. So, why don't we ask the following question? If you're going to say that a katan cannot be chayiv in mitzvos d'rabbanan because he's not subject to lo sasur, you may recall when we talked about mitzvos d'rabbanan, we discussed at length that it's the Rambam's view, yes, that lo sasur is what obligates us in mitzvos d'rabbanan, but the Ramban disagrees. According to the Ramban, lo sasur does not cover extra dinim that Chazal make. And therefore, we were forced to have a discussion, you recall, Rabbi Chanan and others, of why are we rabbinic Jews? Why do we follow rabbinic Judaism if lo sasur is not what obligates us? If you want to explain the view of the Ramban, how do we have a reason to fulfill mitzvahs d'rabbanan in the first place? So we spoke about that. We came up with some various approaches. So my question for you is, whatever answer you're going to use for the Ramban about mitzvahs in general, mitzvahs d'rabbanan in general, why don't we say the same could work for a katan? The problem is that the katan is not subject to lo sasur. According to the Ramban, lo sasur is not what does it anyway, and we need to find some other reason to get us into rabbinic Judaism. So why can't that same logic work for ketanim? What would you say to that?
Avi? We don't have any framework at all where the same obligation is anyway.
But why does it have to be the same? If we found some way to figure out how we're obligated in mitzvahs to Rabbanan, according to Ramban, right? Just specifically for the Ramban, if we have some explanation as to what is mechayiv us, so why does that mechayiv not work for ketanim also? Or why can some similar concept not work for ketanim?
Wouldn't this question be thrown the other way?
I mean, why are we chayiv in mitzvahs to Rabbanan b'chlal?
No, I'm saying, why would you assume that just because we can find a way for Ramban to be mechayiv
No, not that it's for sure. But maybe we'll ask the question from a different direction. Maybe this will help. What is the problem, according to the Ramban, with a child being obligated in mitzvahs d'rabbanan?
Well,
because it can't be so simple as saying, well, they're not subject to los osur, because we don't necessarily need los osur. So then what is the problem? Not how could there be a problem, but what is the problem? Maybe that question answers a little better. Ariel?
I think some of the toast was that discussed how someone eats a shir last of the exact, so like Rabban, people to see zebra, people who are high deraisa.
Mm-hmm.
He says since he has the potential to eat the shir deraisa, he can do what the others are deraisa. He has some relevance to the mitzvah, he has some shaykhus to the mitzvah. A katan has no at all, you know, connection to mitzvahs like the chlal.
Yeah, so I agree on that point. That question more specifically, right? I think that chiluk is easier to draw. Like, if you want to say, with the question some of the Rishonim are asking, and they give all kinds of different answers to, that why would it be, let's say, that we would perhaps, assuming this combination of facts is the case, that somebody who ate Kedei Sviya is only chayv in benching midrabanan. I'm sorry, who did not eat Kedei Sviya, who ate Kezias, is only chayv in benching midrabanan. Why should we let him bench for somebody who ate Kedei Sviya, who's chayv min haTorah? That's not right, especially if we're not going to let it cut, and just because of his rabbinic chiyuv. So what's the difference? So if that was your question, assuming that all the elements laid out that way, I could hear it. You're saying, no, there's a difference. The katan has no daraisa connection to this mitzvah. While the adult who ate a kezayis, he has a shaychus to the mitzvah daraisa of benching. He's technically a mulchuyuv bedavar. And what the drabanan did was it extended his general hischaivus into this situation.
So making a jump to other mitzvahs as well.
Right. So, but now the question is, if that was the question, I hear it, but what we're asking is, the idea of being chayiv in mitzvahs d'rabbanan, are you assuming that every mitzvah d'rabbanan is an extension of some mitzvah d'raisa, and therefore that's where the chiyuv comes from?
Now, not differentiating between d'raisa and d'rabbanan, they're saying they have a shaykhus to mitzvahs first place.
Mm-hmm. And so what does that shaykhus do for us? So how does that shaykhus...
Like the Torah mitzvah. So like you could... So the Rabbanah could extend it to the... It'd be like a nachri. You wouldn't think to be mechayiv a nachri.
Is it like a nachri?
Well, if he has no obligation. Or a...
Yeah, I'm not sure. So, I think there are a couple of approaches to consider here. One is, we could say, as some Achronim say, that the Ramban never really dismissed Lo Sasser as a complete source. He just wasn't ready to go as far as the Rambam. But that's a little bit weaker in the actual words of either the Rambam or the Ramban. But that some understand that the Rambam really thinks that Lo Sasser gives Chazal the authority to make specific mitzvos. And the Ramban understands it more generally, but still understands that Lo Sasser is applicable to the concept of Dinim D'Rabbanan. So if that's the understanding, which is, again, harder to see in their actual words, but if that's really the way it works, okay, so that's the answer. So adults have some connection to Lo Sasser, or Chayim Lo Sasser, and Lo Sasser has some reason to bring them into the world of D'Rabbanans, while Tanim don't. Or, alternatively, because again, I'm not so enthralled by that approach.
No, I don't get that.
Well, I think part of what I'm not comfortable with, I don't know how well it works with the words, but some Achronim say that the Rambam and the Ramban both agree that Lo Sasser addresses Din and D'Rabbanan that are new. It's just the Rambam felt that it's much more specific, that it becomes a Din that's connected to the Din D'Raisa itself, and the Ramban sees it as a more general Tzivui. Which, again, I think it's a difficult interpretation, and if anything, it's actually more likely that the Rambam holds what was just attributed to the Ramban, and the Ramban doesn't connect Lo Sasser at all. So, what I think is probably more relevant here is that maybe the Ramban doesn't have the same issue that we thought he did. That maybe his reason for excluding Ketanim from the potential of being Chayiv, it's not because of Lo Sasser. It's not because you need Lo Sasser to be chayiv and a katan doesn't have that. You could say it one of two ways. And I think two different statements of the Ramban point you in two different directions in terms of these two ways. One, if you look at the Ramban in the Malchamas and Brachos, I think it's more consistent with saying that it's not that a cotton can't be chayiv. It's that the cotton is not the target here. It's that the mitzvah of chinuch is on the father. So therefore, it's his mitzvah for that reason. Not because it's a technical impossibility to be chayiv a cotton, but simply because the obligation of education is on the parent. So it does not impose any obligation on the cotton. If you look at the Ramban in Kiddushin, this is a Kedai thing to see. I didn't put this on the Marmar Komos, but maybe make a note of it and look at it when you get a chance. The Ramban in Kiddushin, Lamad Aleph in the Beis, the Ramaskol Lamanda Omer, that's the Ramban that the Ran was quoting. The Ran in Megillah was quoting this Ramban, the Ramban in his commentary contribution. So there, the Ramban also seems to say that the mitzvah is simply on the father. And that could be, again, enough reason to say it. But he also goes on to say that cotton lav mebad mitzvah, lav ben mebad mitzvah, that a katan is not somebody who is shaykh to do mitzvahs. So perhaps what the Ramban is saying is that the katan simply doesn't make sense to give him a tzibur. Not because of the technicalities that you need bo sasur to have authority here in that mitzvah. But maybe just dumb. The whole concept of mitzvah is a tzivui, is a commandment, and when you are pre the age of das, so then you're not shayach to be b'chol mitzvah. You're not shayach to be called a mitzvah. So maybe that's the Ramban issue. So that gives us three reasons to exclude a katan from the obligation of chinuch. It's a different consideration than a nachri, because the truth is a nachri is chayiv in some mitzvahs also. Nachri is chayiv in
saying tarya.
Yeah, but part of that is the design of mitzvahs. So, and that's going to have all kinds of implications. So I think the cotton and the nachri are really fundamentally different from each other in a lot of ways. But basically, this gives us three reasons to exclude a cotton from the chiyuv of mitzvahs in general, but even the Ramban. One is to say it's not technically possible because they're not subject to los aser. Another is to say it doesn't matter whether you have los aser or not. It's just the whole concept of a mitzvah by a lav bar das doesn't make sense. And the third is to say, well, it could happen, but it doesn't happen because the chiyuv of chinuch is on the father, so he's the one with the mitzvah, not for any lack of possibility with the child. Simply, it's the father who has the commandments. Sammy?
What if, let's say, the act of the father, or on the mother of the father, was like very circumstantial? Like, in other words, you're at the table, and you have this katan, and two adult males, and they're thinking about making a mazon, but they realize they can't. And then the kid says, oh, why can't I make a mazon? You know, and then they start to, like, basically explain it to him. He's like, oh, maybe now he's a bar das. Maybe now he understands it, and he could be, like, mishapit in the mazon. Why would
so you're opening up the question in general of what do we mean by saying Clinton is a lot of bar das. That's a fascinating question, which hopefully we will get a chance to explore a little bit more. Seems to me in a couple of different levels, such as the concept of being a bar das, really being a bar responsibility in general. And that is a closely kind of concept.
Right.
And it's actually, let's hold off on that maybe for a minute, because maybe actually we'll address that in a specific context in a minute, if that addresses your question. But there's a lot of different dimensions when I'm going to take that issue. So let's hold off for a minute and see how that comes back. So let's think about it this way. So what you seem to have here is the Rishonim who say the cotton is not high at all, even the Rabbanan. We just saw three different ways to say that. Now, let's apply that to something we started to say yesterday. That, what about those who say a katan is mechuyav? How did the katan become mechuyav? So, if we think you need to be chayav and lo sasa. So, it's taka a question, how does the katan become obligated without lo sasa? So we can borrow from our Ramban discussion, even if we're not yet sure where the Ramban himself fits in. But when we talked about Dinim D'Oraisa and Dinim D'Rabbanan, we asked the question, if you don't believe that Lo Sasser is the Mechayev, what could be the Mechayev? And we discussed, Bukhana, like, maybe once you recognize that it's Ratzon Hashem, Chazal are revealing to you that it's Ratzon Hashem. So, therefore, that becomes something that you're obligated to do, because why should you not fulfill Ratzon Hashem once you know about it? So here, started to say yesterday, you could make a clear case, maybe even stronger than most other Drabbanans, that the Ratzon Hashem is evident here. Because adults are given clear instructions what they should do and what they should not do. So maybe that paints a pretty clear picture of what is good and what is bad. And we drew the comparison yesterday, which I asked you to see the Gemara today. We took a look at the Gemara about Chazishir, which is the first of today's list. And so there, the Gemara in Yuma says that, according to one opinion, it's the opinion that we follow, having less than a kezias of the prohibited food is a Torah prohibition. And this is the rice. The Gemara has two, maybe they're combined, but two possible angles as to why it's a Torah prohibition. And one is that it's simply a svara, that it's compelling. And the way the Gemara identifies that, it was with an Aramaic phrase, which is subject to interpretation. That kevan dechazil is trufe, isura ka'achil. So that, which you can now understand a little better now that you've seen that Gemara, there's two different ways in the Achronim to understand that phrase. On the one hand, it could be a lashon of siak, of concern. But oh, kevan dechazil is trufe, since there is a fear that this could be combined with more. So then, that's something to worry about. Yisura ka'achil. Let's prohibit eating this because we have to worry that a little bit is going to lead to more. That's one approach. But another approach that you find is, no, it's not a siyah. It's not what the Gemara means. The Gemara is saying something else. The Gemara is saying, kevan dechazi l'tzrufe. Since the same substance, if you just add more, just more. It's not like basar b'chalav, where you have to add something different. But you just have more of the same. You're going to get in trouble. You're going to get malchus. You're going to get an onesh. So what does that show you? It shows you that yisura ka'achil. This substance must be bad. If you keep going along this path, you get punished. There must be something wrong here. Yes.
Similar to the Gemara of Chacham about golden silver.
Okay. Yes.
If you're mazik silver, thinking it's gold, you're still high because the action.
We'll accept the comparison at least for synergy points, if for nothing else. but I mentioned to someone this morning that I called this. Well, I think in the past I've called this the marijuana svara, but some of us in this room now live in states where they don't know what the problem is with marijuana. So a good number of people in this room live in states where what am I talking about? So it used to be all over America illegal, and you have a certain amount in your possession, you can go to jail. And you have more, you can be considered a dealer, but even less than that, you're eligible to be arrested. So let's say you have less than the shear. You have less than the amount that you can get arrested for. So, would one assume that the President of the United States could come out to a press conference and have a tiny little bit of drugs with him, and he'll be smoking it or whatever in the middle of the press conference, And they'll say, oh, it's Pachos Mikashir, it's okay. Right? No, because we understand that the statement the government is making is that this is bad stuff. And even if you're dealing with it on a level that's below the threshold, it's clearly meant to be discouraged. So we understand that this is not something we want to get involved with at all. So the Gemara is saying that if at a certain level you're subject to an onesh, you can read here that this is bad stuff. So therefore you shouldn't have it at all. So we could use this as a pretty compelling story for Chinuch Lasso. That if the Torah is saying that adults are commanded to do things and prohibited from doing other things, what we're saying is these are good things and bad things. And children are basically like Chatzi Shir. Children are not technically subject to being ordered what to do in this area, but they can figure out pretty well what's good and what's bad based on these rules. And therefore, there's a strong svara to say that this is how they should behave. Now, again, this is not necessarily even about training them for mitzvos. This is about the here and now. Right? This is about saying that not that the 10-year-old should do this because when he's going to become an adult, it's going to be relevant. But he should do it because right now, this is a good behavior for him. Even though technically he's not subject to chiyuv. But maybe it's a technicality in the same sense that less than a shir is a technicality. And therefore, if he's sensitive to what's a good thing, he'll do it anyway. So that's a pretty compelling idea. Now again, let's zero in on what that would mean. That would mean that this is not in the category of hergel from mitzvos, but this is more in the other category. Something the Kohen should do for himself. And it's because of the here and now. It's not because of the future. You know, it's such a one possible nafka mina that whole discussion. I'm sure at some point, just to mention the Avnei Nezer story about Yom Kippur, I mentioned this. And at the Avnei Nezer, every time I tell it, it gets younger and younger. So the Avnei Nezer, when he was 2 days old, so he was eating onion kipper because he was 2 days old. So his father said to him, "Hey, Avnei, it's Yontif. Maybe you should make kiddush before you eat." So he said, "I'm not allowed to drink." As he said that, "I'm not going to make kiddush because why should I make kiddush? I'm not chayiv mitzvah. I'm 2 days old. So the only reason I would make kiddush is so that when I grow up, I'll know how to make kiddush. But when I grow up, I don't plan on eating on Yom Kippur. So why should I make kiddush for eating on Yom Kippur when that's not something I'm going to do as an adult?" So that's a certain angle in what chinuch is about. But if we want to say that it's just because it makes sense to do now, so that's really a whole different approach. Right? And that really takes us in a whole different direction. Now, so why does the Ramban not say this way? Right? The Ramban himself, who says the katan is not subject to being chayiv, and if we want to use a svara like this to say that's why all of us are chayiv and mitzvos to Rabbanim, why does the Ramban not like this? So it could be either because it's simply, you know, you really have to focus on the second part of his words in Kiddushin. Because even saying that the mitzvah of chinuch is on the father, okay, but still, why is this not compelling that the child should still, to the extent that he understands, do mitzvahs also? So perhaps that's where we get into this concept of the rest of his words there, la bar mevin mitzvah, that the concept of chiyuv is inextricably connected to the notion of mitzvah. And if you are not subject to being chayiv in things because you're not bar das, so then you simply don't have a relationship to mitzvos in that way. So you can't consider a katan a mitzvah, a mechuyav adaver, because the whole concept is simply not relevant to him until he is old enough to accept responsibility. So to go back to Sammy's point, different usages of the word das. It's really, it can get very confusing. I'll tell you a story which is a little bit ahead of us, but I'll just, maybe it's worth bringing in now, that the whole concept of how Das is used in this context can be very confusing. Because what we're seeming to see right now is that Das could mean understanding and appreciating what a mitzvah is. Or it could also mean that it could refer to responsibility and say that a katan at the age of 10 is simply not ready to accept responsibility, and therefore we can't consider him mechuyav b'davar. He may understand very well what a mitzvah is about, and the themes may resonate with him tremendously, and he might be able to give a whole chabura about it, but still he's not somebody who's shaykh to be mitzvah. So maybe we have to define das as far as gedolim and ketanim, as far as 13 and 12 for boys and girls respectively, as really the age of responsibility rather than the age of understanding in terms of having a comprehension of what the concepts are about. So just to illustrate how the word can be very confusing, I remember, this is related to the sugya, just something we haven't really got up to yet. So when I was in 12th grade, I took bechinas to go to yeshiva, and I took a bechina with Reb Mendel Bachman, who had become a Rebbe in Karen Biavna, and I had a question for him, which we ended up corresponding about later in the year, because I was bothered at the time by a comment of Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Shlomo Kluger is a great gong, but he has very unusual ways of thinking. You have to really train your thinking differently to appreciate what he says. So he discussed the following. Said that there is a kasha, which I'm eventually going to give you some makaris that talk about this, just to give you a little bit of a preview, that if you're not allowed to feed children isurim, which we'll eventually see, that we're not allowed to feed children chazer and the like, as an extension of some of the concepts that we're talking about. So why are you allowed to feed children anything on Yom Kippur? Why don't we say that on Yom Kippur all food is basically treif, and we shouldn't be able to give children anything? Now there are a number of answers. We can talk about that in a different discussion. We'll get back to give you more to see about that. But this is a kasha that's far from talk about. So Shlomo Kluger writes that the whole concept of not giving children Yisurim doesn't apply when the concept itself makes no sense regarding the cut. If it's something like chazer, so chazer is the same for a grown-up and for a child. So you could say, okay, the child shouldn't eat chazer just like the grown-up shouldn't eat chazer. But if it's something which is going to be fundamentally different for the katan, so then it doesn't apply. And he says, what do I mean by that? That when it comes to Yom Kippur, the isser is actually not eating. The Torah doesn't prohibit eating on Yom Kippur as much as it prohibits breaking your fast. You're not allowed to break, you have a chiyuv to fast, and you're not allowed to break your fast. Which is why, parenthetically, the shir on Yom Kippur is not a kezayis. Kezayis is the definition of achila. We talked about this a little bit before Yom Kippur this year, about that's larger than a kezayis. Because the issue is not that you can't eat on Yom Kippur, it's that you can't break your fast. So breaking a fast in Gemara language, in Hebrew, it's called Yishuv Hadas. You want to, when you have Yishuv Hadas, it's when you have broken your fast. In Aramaic, it's called Yituve Daita. Same words in Aramaic. So says Rav Shlomo Kluger, the Isser on Yom Kippur is not to eat, which maybe would be something that kids and adults have in common, but the Isser on Yom Kippur is Yishuv Hadas. A katan, says Rav Shlomo Kluger, doesn't have Das. The whole concept doesn't apply. So therefore, it's okay. So I was totally taken aback by that because it's different Das, right? So we mean, Yishuv Hadas means satisfaction, means not being miserable starving. And the Das that a katan doesn't have is not that. Trust me, a katan very much can tell the difference between when they're hungry or not. So to say, oh, a katan doesn't have Das, therefore the concept of Yishuv Hadas doesn't apply to a katan, so you can be fed on Yom Kippur, I was troubled very much by that Shlomo Kluger. So this is a question I asked Blachman during my Bechina. And so we had a correspondence about it throughout the year. And he had a way of understanding how Rav Shlomo Kluger, again, you just have to reorient your thinking of what he meant by maybe das is something which is defined differently and could include both of these terms. But it goes to your point that das is a term that we don't know for sure what it means in every context. And perhaps relevant to your question and relevant to understanding our Ramban, that understanding what a mitzvah is about, that's not the das that you need to be chayiv in mitzvahs. To be chayiv in mitzvahs, you need a das that represents responsibility. So you could have a brilliant cotton who could know Shas Mishnayis by heart and give you a whole shiur about any mitzvah, but if he's less than the age of responsibility, it's not shaykh to be mechayiv him in mitzvahs, and maybe that's what this Ramban in Kiddushin is saying. So it's worth seeing the Ramban inside, because the Ramban is the one that Ran quotes in Megillah, but the language is different, and that may open up the possibility that what the Ramban's problem is really different than what we otherwise might have assumed was bothering him. Yes, sir.
So then just to follow up, so that's obviously like one major side of the equation, but in terms of the person who would, in theory, be explaining the din, the halacha, or the basis, whatever it is, does that person, A, like, successfully execute the din of chinuch, and then B, could that potentially be factored in, meaning, like, this, let's just say the kid hasn't necessarily accomplished the da'as of responsibility, just meets out age, but, like, he's accomplished enough, just by asking about the question and the being explained the question by the person doing cleanup, that maybe combined it would help to it would suffice to include the kid in the Mizumin or not.
So presumably explaining him, no. The question is, does the chiyuv of cotton that already exists have him bench? Does that do anything for Zeman purposes? That's actually an interesting question. The Rambam seems to imply. They put the Rambam on this Makoros at some point about the Katan and the Zeman. So it sounds like from the Rambam that a Katan both can be Mizamin among themselves. And even Moshmo, so even the can be Mizamin as part of the adult Zeman. The other Rishonim didn't accept that. But that's not because of what you're saying. It's because of the chiyuv that a katan has al tzchinuch, assuming that he has the chiyuv. That's where there was machlokis around that point. Okay, so let's try, before we're out of time, to get a few more points in here. And this is definitely going to overlap, sorry. But, okay, we're doing the best we can. But, well, one issue, I gave you some makoros today that talk about apotropos. You saw that, the Gemara in Gittin and elsewhere. So just that was also interesting to extend what we spoke about yesterday and the day before. The question of, is the chiyuv specifically on the father, or could it be anybody who's in charge? And could the mother enter into that role? We mentioned that could it be Hilni Malka was involved because the husband wasn't there, which would be against the Tosus Yishanim Nimba that says the opposite, that there must have been a husband who's not being mentioned here. But would it work better the opposite way to say there's no husband, and therefore if there's no husband, then the mother should step in a supervisory role. So here it's just interesting to note that the Gemara in Gittin talks about an apotropos who has the obligation not just to provide for the estate, but also to get galulav and an esrog and everything else on behalf of the, or many other things on behalf of the katan. And it's an interesting discussion. Should one say that that has some kind of a specific context to it, or is that because the apotropos has now occupied the position of the father, as some people want to suggest? And could that perhaps create a mitzvah of chinuch in his role? So it sounds a little bit from, as Jacob Sachs will tell you, a little bit from the Aruch HaShulchan and a little bit from the Steich Hemed, that maybe that could be said that... So Rav Zalman Lechemia in his shiurim about this, thank you for making sure that doesn't get forgotten. So he emphasized that instinctively one would not think this way, but that there are a number of Achronim who did take this way to say that the Chiyuv of Chinuch could extend to anyone who's in charge of the child. And again, our question could be, does that mean like the Chinuch of a father in general of our gila mitzvos, or should we say because the child has a mitzvah, and therefore once he has the mitzvah, so whoever is in a position to help him perform the mitzvos has a role which would be similar to the mother's role as well. Okay, so this all gets us into another major topic, which I can't believe it's this late and we haven't started yet, so we're going to have to do what we can. But let's at least introduce this point. The topic that the Ritva that you saw some time ago on our daf takes up. And in the Ritva, daf beis and beis and sukkah raises the issue of raising the issue, that what if the height of the sukkah has been raised, and it's more than 20 amos, like the discussion of Hilni Malka. So why don't we say that that's good enough for chinuch? All right, so they're not actually obligated. It's only an educational obligation. So why don't we say that that's enough? Right, you saw this Ritva?
Mm-hmm.
So what does the Ritva say over there? Right, the Ritva writes that it seems to be clear that chinuch requires not simply that you teach a lesson about the mitzvah, not that you give a plush lulav and esrog squeezy toy that teaches what a lulav generally looks like but isn't really one at all, but that the mitzvah has to be done with full kashrus. It has to be done in a way that actually qualifies for the mitzvah. And the Ritva says that because I've seen people who have misunderstood this point, I've seen people who have not appreciated that that's what chinuch requires, so therefore I am making this point. So let's at least try to get this out in the next few minutes, and we'll have to take it to another level soon. But why should that be true? I think there are a couple of possible angles one could take to this. Why should it matter? Once we're teaching, we know there's all kinds of different dimensions of teaching and all kinds of different levels that people are ready for. So why should it be true that a mitzvah, if the purpose of mitzvah, of chinuch, is education, and I can educate through a pasul chefza, and I could sit there in the sukkah and say, child, this is what the sukkah looks like. This one happens to be too tall, but you get the general concept. And when you grow up, make sure to have the right height. So why should it be so clear to the Ritva that a mitzvah that's done in an inadequate fashion is not only inadequate for an adult, but also for the mitzvah of chinuch is also inadequate? What's the problem with it? What do you think? Yes, Sabadaya?
It could be sort of like this, as far as you're saying, that if mitzvahs really do have an objective, positive value to them, so then there is a value in doing them in the proper way because it's intrinsically valuable.
Oh, okay. So that's something which seems to emerge from our discussion. Right? Because it would seem, again, just to address this in a brief fashion, because we're going to have a break, that could have Parsha tomorrow, and then Sunday Shir, I guess, go back to finish your Hanukkah, so it's going to take us. So let's try to get some full sentence about this out before we have to take a break. One could say that the issue is, before getting to Jed's point, one could say, well, maybe it's that we don't want to miseducate. That while we're trying to convey a lesson, maybe it's crucial that the lesson be done in a completely perfect way, because when the child grows up, he could get a misunderstanding otherwise. And we even mentioned the other day that maybe he could make a case that Hilni Amalka would have been better off eating with her sons on a park bench outside than she would have in a pasul sukkah, because maybe that's less problematic as far as miseducating. So maybe that's the issue. But alternatively, you could say that no, maybe we just established today that there is a value in the katan doing the mitzvah himself. And therefore, if that's the case, so we want him to do it right. That's the whole point, is he's supposed to do mitzvahs too, so that he's got to do the actual mitzvah. And having a stuffed animal, having a stuffed lulav, is not going to accomplish that. It's not going to be a mitzvah for an adult. It's not going to be a mitzvah for a katan either. So that could make a lot of sense. Now, what's interesting is that there is what seems to be a stira to the ritva. And this is discussed in later poskim as well. And this is some sources I gave you to look at. But the ritva himself has a concept which later svarim have, that there are issues with, in general, we discussed this last year, we talked about Kiddushin, Sigim, Matanam, Anas, Lahachzir, that on the first day of Sukkot, functionally speaking, the first 2 days of Sukkot, you have to own your Lulav and Esrog. So there are all kinds of questions. If you want to share a Lulav and Esrog, what can you do? Can you give it to somebody on Yantif? Can you give it to somebody on condition he gives it back to you, etc., etc.? So a katan is a problem, because if you want to give it to a katan and then get it back later, a katan is not a person who's able to be makna the lulav back to you. So poskim, the rishonim, are discuss what to do about that. And the ritva, for example, discusses that you could give it to him in a way that ultimately won't actually really be his. So that, not going into the technicalities of how, but there, that's going to be a problem, because you're not Yotze on the first day of Sukkot with a lulav that's not yours. So why would we endanger, why would we bring about this scenario for the katan? What's the point of him taking a lulav that's not his? The mitzvah is no good. So apparently there's a, yeah, Jacob?
Well, couldn't it just be that physically the mitzvah is perfect, it's just the technicality on
Okay.
Realm?
But why is that difference significant? Yes, that difference is there, but why does that matter?
Physically during the mitzvah, every aspect of the mitzvah is perfectly fine.
Right, so what?
So when he grows up, he knows exactly what to do.
Oh, so that's the point, right? If you want to say that we're worried about messing up his education. So maybe if the mitzvah, as far as anyone could tell, and you could take it to a lab, it'll be the same lulav as every other lulav. So then we're not worried, because even though technically he's not Yotze because it's not his, but there's nothing here that he's going to misunderstand when he grows up. He's not going to say, oh, when I was a kid, there was a lulav that was technically not mine. He's just not going to know that, so it's going to be fine for his future education. That's different than a mitzvah, which is inherently flawed, like a sukkah that's too high. Right? So that's great. That makes a lot of sense if you want to say it's about training. But what about the idea that it should be your own personal chiyuv? Then the distinction doesn't make sense. Aye, but it does, because the Ritva himself is of the view like the Ramban, and maybe even more so. The Ritva himself in his Chidushin, and in a few places, writes that the mitzvah is not on the katan at all. So this would be a nafkamina of this point, that if the mitzvah was on the katan, then maybe we should require it to be fully kosher, not just in obvious ways, but in all ways, and this is a steer in the Ritva. But if the ritva doesn't hold the chiyuv on him at all, maybe it's all about education from the parent, and then maybe this distinction, taka, does make sense. And it's not going to leave us with a problem. Yes?
If the katan knew that it was technically not okay, that it would be more...
That would be more of a discussion, yeah. But if assuming here this is not something he has to be aware of, this, by the way, this is a beautiful sefer of Shas and Shuvas by a contemporary mechaber. It's called Beis Matisyo. So in the Beis Matisyo, he points this out, that it works out the Ritva L'Shutaso, that if he's not holding the Zechiv on the cotton in the first place, so then this distinction holds up, that something he's not going to perceive as any kind of a flaw, maybe that's something we can accommodate. But something that he will see as something that's missing in the mitzvah, that's where you have a bigger problem. Okay, so there's a lot more to say about this. Eventually we'll finish, you know, well, never finish education. Eventually we'll finish this topic. But for now we have to have mincha, which may also be milashim, you know, on some level. So who wants to daven first?